Everyone, thank you for tuning in to the Postmodern Realities podcast from the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. It's August 2018, and you're listening to episode 83 of Postmodern Realities, and I'm Melanie Cogdill, managing editor of the Christian Research Journal. On this episode, I'm joined by Bob Perry, who has a master's in Christian apologetics from Biola University and is a speaker with the Life Training Institute and a contributing writer to our journal. In the 2018 Volume 41, Number 3 issue of the Christian Research Journal, which features our mindfulness cover story, Bob has written an article for our Effective Evangelism column, which is a practical advice column on how to reach people of other faiths and of no faith with the gospel. Bob's article is called Mere Ambassadors. Bob, it's good to have you on.
Good to be here, Melanie. Thanks.
Well, your article is about how Christian evangelism is impacted at times when there are high-profile Christians who make outrageous statements in public or on social media, or some kind of soundbite from some of these people makes the rounds. And before we get into how we can deal with this issue, can you give us some examples of the kind of things that kind of make us cringe as Christians when we see them out there in the media?
Sure. I guess I was kind of alerted to this, I think it was by you actually, who shared an article with me from The Week, which is a kind of a news summary magazine that covers all kinds of news from all over the world. There was an article in there by Jonathan Merritt talking about Pat Robertson. And he kind of went over the history of some things that Pat Robertson has said over the years. For instance, in 1998, he warned that Disney's Gay Days down in Orlando might be punished by either terrorist bombs or possibly a meteor, he said. He has agreed with the Reverend Jerry Falwell that the 9/11 terrorist attack were probably due to the fact that abortionists and gay rights activists at the ACLU were so successful in the United States. He's talked about Hurricane Katrina might have been punishment for sins, or that deadly tornadoes in the Midwest might have happened because people didn't pray hard enough. And these articles are out there in the media. They get wide national attention. And so people hear this and think that this is the kind of things that Christians believe. And it's not just, Pat Robertson is just one example. We have a Baptist preacher on the Patheos blog, which is a religious and kind of political blog that tries to cover all different left and right views, I guess you could say. It's a popular blog, and on there was an interview with a Baptist pastor, I believe he's from Texas, who subscribes to what he calls polyamorous Christianity. He talks about how this is a normal thing, and that when he has talked about it, Christians of other persuasions who don't agree with him have reacted negatively. And I just want to read you, this is a quote from a Baptist minister. He says, "The only people who have responded negatively are church expletives that have no knowledge of God. Let me tell you, though, there have been some nasty ones. People call me a heretic. People call me disgusting. People have threatened my life. I could go on and on. These people sound like they know anything about love. Hell no. I ain't listening to a expletive word they say. I know who I'm listening to. I hear the voice of God. I am the way, the truth, and the life, and no one can love me and condemn polyamory, for I am polyamorous." There's progressive pastors like John Pavlovitz who have said that Christians who claim to be pro-life aren't really pro-life. In fact, might not even be Christians at all because they don't subscribe to the same social justice program that he subscribes to. And even just a few weeks ago, the Attorney General of the United States used Romans 13 to try to rationalize why children were being separated from their parents at the border, and we all know that's a you know, I don't know what side of that whole issue people are on, but to invoke Romans 13 in that way is just a misuse of the Bible. So we have all these kinds of things out there all over the spectrum about how people think, and these things get amplified in the press, especially in the days of social media now, where you'll hear these on the national news as if this is a perfect representation of what Christians actually believe. And it makes our job as evangelists really difficult.
Well, I do want to let our listeners know that they can go back onto this podcast feed, either on equip.org or on your iTunes subscription if you get it. And if you missed the episode, we did an entire episode on so-called Christian polyamory. So you might want to listen to that one, and that's available free through iTunes or on our website. So why do you think that these kinds of things get some exposure, besides the fact that they're just really outrageous and I guess what we'd call clickbait, so people would click on it, but these things do get a lot of exposure, and why do you think that is?
It's human nature. Controversy makes good copy. I mean, people, that's why people love to listen to talk radio, or you turn on a cable news show on any evening, no matter which, you know, they're all slanted in one direction, I guess, but all you hear is people talking over each other. People love debate. They love arguments. They want to hear outrageous things that it drives ratings. And I think that is the primary reason that these things get so much exposure.
And it seems to me that these kinds of comments make evangelism much more difficult, especially if it's somebody who is not a Christian and not even religious or even have a background. They just have perhaps a wrong view of Christianity just based on what's out there. So why do you think these comments make evangelism more difficult in general?
I think because our culture today, everything is political now. It's difficult to disconnect theology from politics. And so when people hear these kind of things, they automatically equate them with one side of the spectrum or the other. The culture has pretty much made the word Christian equivalent to a right-wing conservative. That's the view that people have. In fact, I didn't mention it before, I don't think, but the article that I just quoted a bunch of those things that Pat Robertson had said, the title of the article was Christianity's Crazy Uncle. In other words, it kind of equates with the way he is thinking as a good representation of Christianity, even if he does seem to say off the wall things. But it also goes on the other side of the spectrum. Some Christians have reacted by demanding that we have left-wing responses. People like Pavlovitz, I just talked about, the Campolos, Rachel Held Evans. These people seem to put the social justice mission before the Christian mission. That's my opinion, I guess. But it comes from both sides of the spectrum, and it divides us. That's what makes good copy. That's what makes the controversy. That's what makes the clickbait, because we hear this controversy between what has become political opinions. And I kind of equate this to the phenomena that we heard recently, this Yanni and Laurel thing. I don't know if you've heard that.
I saw that on social media, where you listen to something and what do you hear?
Right. I listen to it and I'm thinking, I hear Laurel. I don't see how you can hear anything different. My son listened to it. He hears Yanni. And why is that? And I guess it's because I read an article about it, that there's the frequencies that are in the recording have high and low aspects to them. And some people are tuned into the high frequency, which I forget which was which, but I think the high frequency, you could hear Yanni, and the low, you could hear Laurel. So whatever you're tuned into is what you're going to hear. And it seems like we have the same thing going on in the culture because of political and theological differences, that they have become equated, that what your theology is supposed to match your politics. So instead of talking about theological commitments and truths that we want to talk about in evangelists, we seem to be fighting about what each other's politics are. I think that's what makes it the most difficult.
So when, you know, someone that we're talking to who is not a Christian brings up kind of the crazy uncle type of Christian, you know, celebrity out person, a politician or whoever it is, what's the first thing that we should do and keep in mind when we respond to this claim that, okay, all Christians are crazy?
The first thing I do is get the facts. My first reaction anytime I hear one of these things is, did they really say that? I mean, admittedly, some of the things that I just listed there, it's kind of hard to believe that anybody would actually say those kind of things. So, and unfortunately, they have said them, but still, we have a responsibility to get the facts in this era of fake news and all this kind of stuff. The first thing we need to do is find out if what these people are accused of saying, or the supposed quotes that we're hearing, if they're actually real.
You're listening to the Postmodern Realities podcast from the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. Today's guest is Bob Perry, and in the 2018 Volume 41, Number 3 issue of the Christian Research Journal, Bob has written an article for our Effective Evangelism column called Mayor Ambassadors. Also in this issue, you will not want to miss out on reading our cover article on mindfulness and our evaluation of scientist and best-selling author Neil deGrasse Tyson's latest book, Astrophysics for Everyone. To read this evangelism article, please subscribe to the journal. A 6-issue subscription is now at a new lower price of $33.50, and to subscribe online, visit equip.org. Well, we were just talking about what we do when people bring up these instances in the media of just wacky things that so-called Christians say. And you talked about getting the facts. So once we have gotten the facts about some claim that was made, that someone's asking us, how would you approach responding to them further?
Well, I think, and I said this in the article, that I think the first thing we should do is, once we get the facts, is resist the temptation to ridicule, to say, you know what, I hear what Pat Robertson or whoever it is just said in the news, and I want you to know that's not my Christianity. This is kind of a flashback to Luke 18, where the Pharisees thank God that they're not like these other men in the temple. That is not how we should be responding. Trying to virtue signal and say that we're better, or you know, we don't think like that, and put them down essentially, isn't the way that we need to project ourselves. They've said what they said. We don't need to try to we do need to try to make the case if what they've said is wrong, but there's a way to go about doing that. And I think one of the problems with our culture is that we think we have to go tell Pat Robertson why he's wrong. We have to be the ones to make sure all our friends know that. But there's a very clear example in Scripture with Paul that when he thought things were wrong in the church, he went out and talked to people privately. In Galatians 2, after years of contemplation and prayer, Paul wanted to clarify what the gospel said, what he should preach among the Gentiles, and he went to the people privately who seemed to be the leaders to figure out if he was getting it right. Later, it says when he came to Antioch, he opposed Peter to his face because he was clearly in the wrong. The key is he did it to his face. And when he saw the leaders weren't acting in line with the truth of the gospel, he confronted Peter in front of the church leadership. So, yes, people who say these kind of outrageous things need to be confronted, but it's not you and me who need to do it. It's people who are on their social level, people who are big names in the news also, who realize that they're making Christianity look bad. Those are the people who need to confront them, but they need to do it privately. And you and I aren't the people who need to do that. We shouldn't be ridiculing or chastising our fellow Christians, especially on social media.
Well, you've been talking about hearing some of these stories on social media. That's probably a typical way these days in 2018 that you're going to hear some of these things as people share articles that seem outrageous. And as you said, you know, a lot of times our initial reaction is to respond on social media. But is there any place for social media at all in these kind of situations?
Sure, I think there is. But it's not, when I say we shouldn't respond, I don't mean that we don't have to make the case for why they're wrong. We can do that. But think about it. If you go out and trash these people on Facebook, there's a pragmatic. It's not just that it's not biblical to go trash your fellow Christian. It's not pragmatic. If somebody read or heard what Pat Robertson said, for instance, Pat Robertson, and I respond to it on Facebook, Pat Robertson is never going to see what I said. That's never going to be on his radar. The things he said about the meteors hitting Disney World and hurricanes hitting New Orleans. If I respond to that on Facebook to my friends, Pat Robertson won't see that. As I said, it's people of his equal stature who should be confronting him about. But when I do that, all my friends and neighbors will see not only the outrageous thing he said, but they're going to see an uncharitable response coming from me, and it will be amplified in social media. That's what I think the problem is, that we don't, not only the gospel is offensive enough, we don't need to make it more offensive. And I think just because somebody says something outrageous, if we come back in a nasty, snarky way in our social media profile, we're just making it sound worse. We're making it sound like that's what Christians do. That we see who can be more outrageous and put the other person down. And I don't think that's productive, especially not productive for evangelism.
So in the evangelism article, you're suggesting two different kinds of approaches to responding to the situation. So how would you handle it with fellow Christians?
Well, most of the people I hang around, just because, you know, we go to the same church or whatever, we probably think kind of similarly about this. We would both think it's outrageous. I just don't bring it up because it's negative. It's preaching to the choir. And I think you have to remember, if you make it a habit of trash talking a fellow Christian like that, you're going to undermine your own credibility. The next time, maybe the friend that you agree with this time, you're going to disagree with next time. And if they see that that's your kind of modus operandi to respond to these kind of things, it kind of undermines your credibility. And the other thing is, especially on social media where you have so-called friends who are, you know, maybe pretty much separated from you, but who see what you put on social media, they may agree with what Pat Robertson said. And so now you're alienating them too and creating more dissension and more controversy that gets things stirred up just like the people in the culture want it to do when they quote these kind of things. If it's someone who disagrees with me, I think the best thing to do, if it comes up and you see that there's a discussion going on, take it private. Do it by direct message, do it by email, but don't do it in a public way that is negative on both sides. Sometimes we take that externally and then we all look bad and we all look like if Pat Robertson's our crazy uncle, we're just the crazy nephew who likes to argue with him. So I think that's very counterproductive. If with other Christians, I think it needs to be done in private and using theological and philosophical reasoning with gentleness and respect, just like 1 Peter 3:15 says, and make your case, but do it in a kind, polite, respectful way.
And what about, you know, interacting with those who are not Christians? You know, I know most of us on social media have a mix, if we're talking about Facebook, of quote unquote friends. I mean, we have people who we know that are non-Christians and people who are Christians and family members. So you've just got a real mix there. And so when we're thinking about, like you said, public posts that everyone's going to see, what are factors we should consider, especially as we relate to non-Christians?
Yeah, it's the difference between having an internal debate and doing evangelism. The internal debate, as I said, we can do in private. But the evangelism, you have to remember that when people see these outrageous comments that people make in the media, and if they know that you're a Christian, they assume that you share the same worldview, and they see you being nasty to each other and making sarcastic comments. All that does is reinforce what they believe is the irrationality and inconsistency of Christians. Their view of a negative view of Christians gets more solidified. So I think the best way to deal with someone like that is always, always, always to start with questions. Ask them why they think what they just heard in the news is crazy. Because it might turn out like, for instance, with the issue of when Pat Robertson said that a meteor might hit Disney World. Ask them why they think that's bad. And the real discussion isn't about how kind of ridiculous it is to say that God's going to send a meteor to hit Orlando. The real issue is the issue of homosexuality, and why would a Christian ever be against somebody about just because who they love is the way they put it. So the real discussion is about a biblical view of the nature and value of human life, when instead that's what we really need to be discussing. So we ask questions to draw that out and see what their real issue is. The real issue in that case is, why do you Christians hate gay people? So we want to explain, we don't hate gay people, but why do we have a different view? So it's a completely different discussion is what I'm saying. You kind of just, if you ask questions and see what it is that they have a problem with, it draws you away from the crazy talk that you're hearing in the media about meteors.
Well, in your article, you said that you thought this kind of discussion might even be easier with a non-Christian. And why did you say that it would be easier with a non-Christian than with fellow believers?
Well, I think because I said that because it's ironic that you start off from a place of agreement. I think that the things I mentioned here are crazy talk, and the non-Christian who hears it also thinks it's crazy talk. So you start out from a position of agreement on common ground, and you can start talking about the different reasons why you say that. And they can see that maybe this Christianity that they're hearing about in the media that they think is crazy and irrational, they can see that there are actually Christians out there who don't think like that, that you can be a Christian and have don't check your brain at the church door, as I like to say, that you can be rational, you can use philosophy, you can use ethics, and you can have reasoned your way to why you think Christianity is true, that you're not just out there emoting and throwing firebombs at people who disagree with you. That's why I said that. I think it's the fact that you can start out on common ground. That's not really normal. Normally you start out from a position of disagreement and try to get them to see your way. But in this case, ironically, you both are on the same page.
I know social media is not normally a place, or not really a place, where you can change anyone's minds, as you were saying. It, like, people tend to gravitate towards their own particular views on whatever subject it is. It could be sports, for example. So, you know, it's not necessarily a place, but sometimes I find in interacting with non-Christians that they're not used to hearing some kind of calm, well-reasoned philosophical questions or argumentation. So I try to diffuse whatever it is, some, you know, all Christians are bigots or some other thing, and start kind of moving the conversation towards the existence of God or something else. And I think that's very helpful, because a lot of times this is what's great about apologetics. And I hope people listening to this podcast feel equipped by these episodes, because I think that's one thing that we can do as we grow in our apologetic tools that we use, is that we are able to engage with people in a calm fashion, whether it be Christians or non-Christians, whether we're talking about theology or just the existence of God with non-Christians. That's a way that's not flame-throwing like you were mentioning. So do you have any other suggestions for us in this area, or any other thoughts you want to say about this topic?
Well, as I mentioned earlier, I think most of our first reaction when we hear something like this, especially on social media, is to lash out and separate ourselves from it. Lately, I've kind of learned to ignore it. I mean, if somebody wants to talk to me about it, I'll take it private and talk to them about it. But otherwise, I ignore it, but I don't waste it. What I do is take the nuggets from what they've said and think about topics that people might want to talk about. Like when somebody said that Hurricane Katrina hit New Orleans because God was mad at New Orleans for being, you know, this debauchery or something. Well, instead of talking about that topic, well, I write a blog post about how natural disasters like that, they make sense in a world that God created, and how that they have to, the weather patterns or whatever that we experience have to be the way they are for life to even be possible or sustainable on the earth. So I take the part of a nugget from what somebody said and turn it into something positive instead of just lashing out and making it a negative thing. And I know this happened, it was a few years ago. You asked me to write an article about why Christianity and if revolution was consistent with Christianity, if it was big biblical. And I went into research that to look for some sources to write that article. And I learned a lot. I had a preconceived notion what I thought about it. But as I wrote that article, I learned more about how you can see it from both sides, that it could be biblical. And it's, there are also aspects of revolution that are not biblical. So that's my suggestion. Even if you don't have a blog or whatever, you're just out there listening to this stuff, write these things down. Because when you are forced to write down what you claim to believe in, it sometimes completely changes the way you approach it. It makes you think about things because you have to think clearly to write something down. And so I've used that as kind of ammunition for myself to take the stuff out of the negative stuff and turn it into something positive that I can write about and make a case and have to convince somebody of why I say what I'm saying I think is true.
Bob mentioned his article that he wrote several years ago, and the title of it is called You Say You Want a Revolution, and that's available free on our website, equip.org, if you would like to read that and just kind of dig deeper into just war theory and this particular subject. So that's available for you free online right now. Well, finally, I want to end with some fun rapid-fire questions for Bob. So, Bob, it's summer. Would you rather have ice cream, smoothie, or frozen yogurt?
Ice cream. Definitely ice cream. Cookies and cream is the best.
Okay. So introvert or extrovert?
Oh, gosh. I'd say I'm pretty much an extrovert. I'm ready to talk to anybody anytime. I hope I'm not obnoxious, but yeah, I'd say I'm an extrovert.
Early bird or night owl?
Night owl. Definitely. I hate getting up early in the morning.
Would you rather wear a suit and tie or a tux?
Oh, gee. I'd rather wear a suit and tie, but actually I'd rather not wear either, but I guess I didn't have that choice.
And what's one of your favorite hobbies?
I don't really have a hobby. I like to play golf, and that, so I'll go to the driving range or get out on the course whenever I can when I'm home, but don't really have a hobby except writing. That's my hobby.
Well, thanks, Bob, for being a guest on the Postmodern Realities podcast.
Thank you, Melanie. It's good to be here.
Today's guest is Bob Perry, and in the 2018 Volume 41, Number 3 issue of the Christian Research Journal, Bob has written an article for Effective Evangelism column, and it's called Mere Ambassadors. To read his evangelism article, please subscribe to the journal. A 6-issue subscription is at a new lower price of $33.50, and to subscribe online, visit equip.org. We'd like to hear from you, so connect with us on social media. Like the Bible Answer Man Facebook page and follow CRI, Christian Research Journal, Hank Hanegraaff, and the Bible Answer Man on Twitter. Follow the Bible Answer Man on Instagram and please subscribe to the Bible Answer Man channel on YouTube. If you like this episode, please subscribe to the Postmodern Realities podcast on iTunes. And when you rate and review our podcast, it helps others to find our content. So please share this episode on your social media accounts. Be sure you tune in daily to the Bible Answer Man broadcast hosted by CRI President Hank Hanegraaff, who answers your questions live on air. To ask Hank a question, call 888-ASK-HANK Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. In addition, head to iTunes and subscribe to Hank Unplugged. It's Hank's new audio podcast. You'll follow Hank off the grid, where he has in-depth conversations with some of the brightest minds discussing topics you care about. So until our next Christian Research Journal author conversation, thanks for listening to the Postmodern Realities podcast.